Good morning, and thanks for sticking around at this late time, almost lunchtime. My name's Diane Bailey. I'm a scientist with the Natural Resources Defense Council, and I want to tell you a little bit about a truck driver exposure study that we did near the Port of Oakland last year. Just a little bit real quick about the organization that I work for. The Natural Resources Defense Council is a large nonprofit environmental advocacy organization that's made up of scientists, attorneys, and analysts. We serve our more than 1 million members and activists through a bunch of offices scattered across the country, plus one in Beijing. And I have no commercial disclosures to report related to the study. Just a quick overview, I want to talk to you a little bit about why we looked at exposure levels among truck drivers, and then give a little bit of background information, talk about how we did the study, and then share a couple of our findings with you. Okay, so why did we look at the levels of diesel soot that truck drivers are exposed to during a typical shift? We wanted to see what the typical exposure levels were and basically drive some of the policy forward. There are a lot of opportunities in California last year and continuing to drastically improve the health of truck drivers, both through some of the labor standards that impact them and also primarily from my perspective, we were interested in the environmental standards and tightening those up and reducing exposure throughout the fleet and all across California. So we focused on drivers serving the Port of Oakland, but we do expect that we would find similar levels of soot within other trucking sectors and especially serving other major ports. The Port of Oakland is the fourth largest in the nation, but here in Southern California we have the largest in the nation, Los Angeles and Long Beach, and so we would expect the situation to be even worse. So we wanted to see if the age of the trucks that the drivers were maneuvering had an impact on their exposure levels to diesel soot. Typically, older trucks are dirtier, and we wanted to see if there was a noticeable contribution from an individual's truck versus the fleet at large. And finally, we just want to provide a general indication of the magnitude of the problem facing these drivers. So just a little background information on the health impacts of diesel exhaust. Not only does it have some general acute exposure effects, nausea, headache, dizziness, et cetera, and a lot of these symptoms, by the way, were reported by the drivers that we talked to in doing this study, but diesel exhaust also contains some really toxic ingredients, sort of a toxic soup. Most notably, diesel particulate matter, which is a widely known carcinogen, and also nitrogen oxides, which are smog-forming gases. And together, these two pollutants are linked to a whole slate of health hazards, from respiratory problems like asthma and bronchitis to cardiovascular problems, heart disease, heart attacks, increased emergency room visits, and even premature death from exposure to diesel exhaust. It was listed as a toxic air contaminant by the California Air Resources Board in 1998. And we also have some good statistics in California in terms of the number of impacts and the cost to our health. The pollution from diesel trucks in California was responsible for about 1,500 premature deaths in 2005, excuse me. And that amounted to a public health tab of about $12 billion in that year alone. And that's not only from the premature deaths, but also the hospitalizations, lost days at work, and also school absences. So you can imagine that the community surrounding freight facilities like ports and freeways are heavily, heavily impacted by the toxic diesel air pollution. In California, we find cancer risks on the order of 1,000 per million near all three major ports. And in West Oakland, that's the community next to the Port of Oakland, the residents there are estimated to be exposed to levels of diesel soot about five times that of other Oakland communities. And Oakland is a fairly large city, so that was quite a shocking finding. But not only are the communities and residents impacted, but the workers are impacted as well. And existing epidemiological studies show that long-term occupational exposure is linked to about a 40% increase in lung cancer among workers. This was mainly done for railroad workers, but we expect to see similar risks among truck drivers. And there were also some in-vehicle studies that were done to look at what people are exposed to inside their cars and trucks. And so you don't have to be driving a truck to be exposed to the emissions. One study from Los Angeles showed that half of a typical person's diesel particulate matter exposure occurs during just an average of an hour and a half of their day while they're driving. Just a little more background on existing and planned programs to deal with this huge problem, which is so acute in California, but we think that it sort of is pervasive throughout the nation. There are a lot of incentive programs here. I'm not going to list them all, but basically what they do is provide a little extra cash to incent truck owners to either replace or add exhaust controls to their trucks. And about over 1,000 trucks have been replaced so far through those programs. We also have idling restrictions that are fairly strict. And there was some statewide legislation a couple of years ago that attempted to close the port loophole, which was that drivers were allowed to idle as much as they want while waiting in line to get into terminals or into distribution center facilities. And that law sort of limits the amount of idling that you can do while queuing. We also have some in-use fleet cleanup rules here. One that was passed last year impacting port trucks specifically requires them to clean up on an accelerated time frame and either add the exhaust controls or replace the vehicles entirely. And there's a statewide truck and bus regulation under consideration now that would, it's a sweeping rule to get all of the trucks in California, not just registered here, but operating here from out of state. It would require them to clean up over the next decade. And finally, the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach have comprehensive truck management programs that they've instated. And starting October 1st of this year, they banned 1988 and older trucks from entering their terminals because of the health and safety hazards of those trucks. Okay, so what did we do in our study? We used an ethylometer, which is a device shown here, to measure black carbon inside the cabs of trucks. We took a sampling inlet tube to collect the air samples, and we taped it at the breathing level of the driver, and we added a GPS device to track the locations of the trucks during their normal shifts. We measured the black carbon during 9 typical shifts in 7 different trucks of varying model ages, and you can see the model years up there. They ranged from fairly old, 1981, to fairly new, 2006. And during 3 of those shifts, we actually had an observer ride along. She had to register as a driver in training to get into the terminals, but she was there to note the conditions that the drivers were experiencing. So what did we find? This shows by truck model year listed on the bottom, the levels of black carbon soot that each of those drivers were exposed to on the typical shift that we measured. And I should note that shifts range from about 7 to 11 hours. It depends on the business that day. But the black carbon ranged here from about 3 micrograms per meter cube to 9, which is incredibly high. That was for the oldest truck, which was visibly smoking. And then you can compare that to the little line at the bottom of the graph, which is background levels. We took a 3-day average inside someone's home in sort of a working class neighborhood of Oakland that wasn't overly influenced by a freeway or another source. And that background level was 0.3 micrograms, so much, much lower than what these drivers were typically exposed to. One thing we noticed was that the exposures changed a lot with the location, where the drivers were. That had the biggest influence, and you can see that freeways were the dirtiest places to operate a truck, and the exposures were highest, and the exposures in and around the port area were fairly high as well. And these two locations together made up for about 3/4 of a driver's day in terms of where they're spending their time. So that's significant, that they're spending the most amount of time in the highest exposure locations. And that's compared to the storage yards for the containers and then just regular surface streets, which registered lower levels of black carbon. So just to sum up some of our findings as we approach noon here. All of the average black carbon levels that we measured in a typical shift were about 10 times higher than the background, so that's significant. There were no safe levels that we found, or low levels, and the samples in the 1981 truck, the oldest truck, were 25 times higher than the background, so that's really a problem when you start to think about how many old trucks are out there on the road. While the air in the newer trucks appeared to be slightly cleaner, still, they weren't that clean, and what we're really seeing, we think, is that the levels inside the cab of the trucks is influenced the most by the surrounding fleet and surrounding ambient air quality. Let's see if I can speed through. One thing I want to note was that windows open versus closed did not seem to have an impact, so again, can't escape the pollution no matter what actions are taken. It's pretty pervasive. Okay, so we translated black carbon levels into diesel particulate matter, and we looked at the cancer risk from that diesel particulate matter using California guidelines from the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, which is part of Cal EPA. And we found that the increased health risk due to the cancer risk of diesel PM was increased by about 2,600 excess cancers per million drivers. So that's incredibly high. Not as high when you look at the OSHA standards. It's about double the OSHA standards. But when you look at what some of the environmental agencies consider as safe, that's about 2,000 times higher cancer risk than what environmental agencies would consider acceptable. And again, all of the drivers were exposed to incredibly high risks, not just those driving the oldest or dirtiest rigs. So how do the levels that we found compare to other studies in the past and other locations? Well, we found levels of diesel PM inside the trucks ranging from about 9 to 23 micrograms. This is diesel PM, so it's higher than pure black carbon. And how does that compare to a school bus study that we did back in 2000-2001? Well, the levels that we found were quite similar, so still a problem. And the cancer risks were a lot higher, and that's mainly due to the much greater amount of time spent, because these are occupational exposures, versus time on a school bus. But it sort of confirmed past studies that show high levels inside the vehicles as opposed to outside. And then the levels were also similar to some studies that were done on Port of Oakland Terminal, so again, occupational exposure and similar cancer risks. The levels were higher than what we found in the surrounding community, even along the trucking corridor of 7th Street in Oakland, but not significantly higher. So again, these findings weren't a surprise. This is similar to past studies. So just to sum up, we believe that in order to reduce drivers' health risk, it's likely necessary to clean up the entire port truck fleet, reduce the wait times at the terminals, and reduce the pollution levels from other port sources. And while this investigation focused on trucks serving the Port of Oakland, we do expect similar findings among other truck drivers, and particularly those serving other ports or rail terminals. And finally, our study sample size was incredibly small and limited, and so we would like to see further study on this issue and attention to older trucks versus newer trucks and what some of the differences are. So just real quickly, I want to acknowledge some of the partners in our research. Terry Minjares was an intern from the UC Berkeley School of Public Health, and she did a lot of the monitoring and physically rode with some of the drivers. And we also thank the trucking firms that cooperated with us and, of course, owe a debt of gratitude to our labor and community allies. More information is posted on our website, nrdc.org, or you can just Google Driving on Fumes, which is the name of the study. We're right at noon, so if folks want to stick around, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I thank you. Right. We don't typically get into this area. A couple of years ago, we became a member of a labor environmental collaboration called Coalition for Clean and Safe Ports. And so we worked with our labor allies, the Teamsters and Change to Win, to look one of the, well, it sort of grew out of a request from that coalition to get more data on truck driver exposure. So yeah, we branched out. Thanks. Anything else? Or are folks hungry? Okay. Thanks very much for your attention.
Stationary.
Well, I mean, you get a gust of wind, and it's like, oh.
Well, yeah, I did it for about 3 weeks measuring the in and out of school buses in the city streets with picking on during the school district. So we had a station at the center.
Yeah. So what kind of levels did you make?
A lot lower. In general, both background and, mass industry.
Right.
But
so that's what we're trying to do, the level playing field, where you are, more than the actual score. That when you're on a freeway, the level being able to be on a
But we were able to put point sources around by logging, by doing a traffic. We had 4 people on the street during the study logging. So we were logging traffic and timing the amount of idling and the type of vehicles that there were, having to be trucks, diesel truck picking up a container on the street going by the monitor. And all that was easily seen. But what I noticed was that the we would move the instrument around and see the average peak would increase significantly.
Yeah, it just looked noisier.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that
from a stationary position. And so I always wondered about whether it could be used in moving vehicles at all. So I don't know the models, whether the model's different. That's what's kind of curious.
Yeah, our mobile model.
Yeah. Is it designed for it to be moved around?
Practiced
it initially to do a school bus. Yeah, so I don't really know I only know the one that's so it's I can't say anything as to any of the model, but I was just curious about that.
And by the way, we are happy to learn about that.
Yeah, really?
We just, it would be me using it all
the time. Yeah. But I can send you the study.
Okay, yeah, I'd be really interested in that. And I just wanted to say, I think there's a lot of user discretion involved, but I know that the echelon was influenced by the motion that gets jostled. And there have been times when I felt like they've stopped.
Well, yeah, I would compare my data with I looked at your previous school bus studies and all the other data. And I was just, what was striking to me was that there was a big difference between stationary data and data in moving vehicles. I mean, it's a significant difference. So that's what made me think about that.
Okay. In the same setting?
Well, there aren't too many studies. There's only a handful where people actually use echelometers, and there are different models. So it's not really a good comparison. But it's just something I noticed. If it's in a vehicle, your average, rolling average, may be higher than if it's just...
Okay, because I've done a lot of driving around where you drive around for a while and you stop and you take, half an hour, an hour worth of measurement at a specific location. And then you move on to the next location.
Yeah.
And I haven't noticed huge differences in doing
that. Yeah, you did that was with the bus study where you measure at the bus stops.
Well, we did some work looking at construction.
Oh, right.
So that's where we were really driving around a lot and stopping for an hour.
Yeah. It takes about, about 5 minutes, 5 or 6 minutes to just restabilize itself.
Right. Before we started in the truck, we were running it for an hour to let it get going and make sure it was functioning fine.
Yeah, well, that might be too. It might be once it's going, once it's got used to the environment, it may give different, may have a different response. I don't know. I have no idea. I was just curious if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear one. Can I give you my card?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Grab that for you.
Yeah, I don't know if I think it was published in Atmosphere and Environment.
Okay.
But I didn't work on the publishing.
Well, after we did our school bus study,
idling, a group that was promoting idling law for of us idling
oh, yeah.
to create
have
no idling zones.
Good.
Yeah, pretty much.
Good.